Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. It's Friday, so Dennis Hart has a roundup of last week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related papers. We'll tell you about a viewing party being held in the wake of President Trump's State of the Union address next Wednesday in Ames as part of a nationally streamed event from Washington, D.C. called Fossil Free Fast, being put on by a wide coalition of grassroots environmental groups. And in the last part of today's show, we'll hear a discussion about the recommendations for Ames High School, the question being, how do we upgrade it? One of the beautiful sounds of January occurs softly but hauntingly at night. I don't know about you, but I recently have been having the pleasure of being lulled to sleep to the sound of the owl hooting in the trees outside my window. KHOI's naturalist Pat Schlarbaum tells you why we are hearing these nocturnal serenades at this time of the year.
Phenology is writing down nature's happenings when they occur. The first snowy owl of winter or the last marsh hawk of the autumn are noted in a journal for future reference. Today's phenology is about great horned owls. Last evening, two owls were hooting while the moon was rising in the east. The air was clear and crisp, just right for breathing. Hoo, hoo, hoo. Then, hoo, hoo, hoo. As they blended their mating calls, they flew into the acreage to their cherished perch near the rabbit habitat, consisting of shrubs and piles of limbs that rabbits cherish. Rabbits and owls feed a system of nature that is landscaped for wildlife, where I come from. The farmstead has 120 years of transition. A prairie marsh complex is what it was. Now it's rabbitat for rabbits, mice, foxes, hawks, and owls, and humans. Great horned owls are our largest native owl and are approximately 18 inches tall and weigh up to 4 pounds. Distinctive horns made of tufts of feathers adorn each side of their head. Great horned owls are the first birds to nest each winter, and they announce their nesting intentions with their calls to all that live in the woodlot. Often an old crow or red-tailed hawk nest provides a platform for their eggs, and they will be laying eggs soon. Yep, in January. To successfully incubate eggs in winter requires special anatomical features. Owls have an area on their belly or abdomen that does not have feathers called a brood patch. The area, about the size of 2 eggs, is bare skin. Feathers are designed to completely cover the brood patch. By teasing the feathers aside on the abdomen, the incubation zone or brood patch will be uncovered if you ever have a bird in hand. Both males and females will possess a brood patch, as both will incubate, yet females, being larger in raptors, do the majority of incubation, particularly through the night. Once eggs are laid, adults will secure the eggs by essentially wrapping their skin around the eggs so incubation can proceed successfully. By sucking the eggs into their abdomens, the body's warmth can be directed through the skin straight to the eggs. The feathers provide an overcoat of insulation to the system. Since one side of the eggs receives the best skin-to-egg contact, the eggs are turned or rotated often. Owls incubate eggs up to 35 days. Raptors typically lay 2, sometimes 3 eggs. A pair that can successfully incubate 3 eggs will pass along those traits genetically to their young. It is believed that's one reason why females are larger than males in the world of raptors. When great horned owls initiate egg laying so early, that provides an advantage to a predator of mammals and other birds. When owls' young are 40 days old or so, they are fledging or flying freely from the nest in March for the first time. And while young are achieving self-sufficiency, the young of their prey, mice and rabbits and other birds, are vulnerable to their hunting strategy and needs. Great horned owls are called tigers of the night sky. They are the main predator of mammals or birds of the woodlot. In our current era, breeding bird surveys are indicating great horned owl numbers are not increasing, possibly due to a virus called West Nile virus. With fewer great horns, other raptors such as endangered barn owls are experiencing a recovery in Iowa savanna areas where grasslands meet the forests, or in our isolated farmstead woodlots. At any rate, great horned owls will always be with us, and their strategy to be the first to nest in January each winter secures their presence into the future. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio, Ames.
Hoo, hoo, hoo. Hoo, hoo,
Hoo.
Thank you, Pat, and thank you, great horned owl, tiger of the night sky. This is Local Talk on KHOI. It's Friday, so here is our municipal reporter, Dennis Hart, with a roundup of last week's local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and related papers.
There was plenty of news on the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers this week. In Tuesday's Trib, word that the Speaker of Iowa's House of Representatives, Republican Chip Baltimore of Boone, was stripped of his Judiciary Committee chairmanship 3 days after he was arrested on suspicion of drunk driving. Republican Representative Zach Nunn of Bondurant will take over as chair. The 51-year-old Baltimore is in his fourth term in the House. Ames police stopped him early Friday morning on U.S. Highway 30. Police had received reports of a reckless driver. His blood alcohol level registered at 0.147%. Iowa's legal limit is 0.08. In a statement, Baltimore said he wholeheartedly agrees with the decision to strip him of his chairmanship and pledged to help Nunn with the transition. The statement said, "From the moment I made the horrible decision, I have taken full responsibility for it and accepted any and all consequences resulting from it." Court documents indicate that Baltimore admitted having about 3 drinks earlier in the evening and that he did poorly on his field sobriety test. He had served 5 years in the judiciary chairmanship. He said he has not decided whether he will run for re-election. Also in Tuesday's Trib, word that possibly hundreds of jobs in Ames were left unstaffed on Monday due to the federal government's 3-day shutdown, which ended Monday night. Major federal employees in Ames account for about 1,100 jobs, and it was not clear how many are considered essential or non-essential. Many of those jobs are based around Iowa State's academic research. The Ames Laboratory is part of the U.S. Department of Energy's research network and has about 745 people working there. The Federal Highway Administration's Iowa division is based in Ames and employs at least 19 engineers and administrators. The U.S. Department of Agriculture employs 321 people at its National Animal Disease Center in Ames and the National Laboratory for Agriculture and the Environment on ISU's campus. Also Tuesday, the Ames Tribune reported that Danfoss had resumed most of its operations in Ames after an employee died from a motor testing accident. All employees were sent home last Thursday after production line worker John Lavery was struck and killed during his shift at the 13th Street location. The company said a safety hood on a motor test stand fell on him. The 45-year-old Lavery was taken to Mary Greeley Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead. The company is working with state OSHA investigators to determine what caused the safety hood to fall. In the meantime, the company was in the process of installing a new style of safety hood, which will be placed in front of the test stand instead of overhead, where the hoods were placed before. Danfoss produces hydraulic transport components at its Ames facilities and employs more than 1,000 people in this area. Also Tuesday in the Tribune, word that the Ames School Board unanimously accepted the voluntary retirement requests of 7 district administrators and staff members at its meeting Monday night. Among those planning to retire, Ames High Associate Principal Michael Avis, Edwards Elementary Principal David Peterson, Edwards Kindergarten Teacher Patricia Moss, Fellows Elementary Teacher Carolyn Bullion, Fellows Media Technologist Julie Ritchie, Ames Middle School Teacher William Lottermeyer, and Sawyer and Mitchell Elementary Teacher Lori Oak. All of them will finish their time with the district at the end of this school year. School Board Member Monique Binken said, in her words, "Many of them have touched my family's life personally, and I know they've touched many lives in our community. The next journey, I hope it's everything it's supposed to be." During the public part of the meeting, the Iowa State School of Education Professor Gail Seiler said that the retirements of Avis and Peterson open up the opportunity for the district to display the goal of bringing diversity and equity through the rehiring process. She said bringing diversity to the roles of Ames school administrators will require intentional effort on the recruitment level. Also Monday night, the school board approved hiring a company to analyze the district's transportation system. That company is School Bus Consultants, which has previously worked with school districts in Des Moines, Iowa City, and Waterloo. The company will review the efficiency and effectiveness of transportation services to identify how changes would impact the financial and operational resources that must be allocated to transportation. The company proposed a price of $16,500 for the analysis. Last month, the school board had discussed the possibility of moving district transportation services in-house, but it agreed to a 1-year contract extension with Durham School Services, as well as to conducting a study of transportation delivery in Ames to better understand the current situation. The idea of bringing in a consultant to do an independent analysis on efficiency and services was proposed as a way to help determine the best path forward for the district. Also in Tuesday's Tribune, a Jasper County man was arrested Monday after police said he threatened to kill the mother of his child and her family. 23-year-old Jake William Waterhouse of Monroe is charged with first-degree harassment. Nevada police said officers received a call from a woman who said she was being harassed by her ex-boyfriend in text messages. Police spoke to Waterhouse about that over the phone, and afterward, he allegedly began texting the woman again and continued to threaten her. A warrant was filed for his arrest, and he was picked up by Jasper County officials and taken to Story County Jail. In Wednesday's Trib, word that the Ames City Council voted to restart its project to build affordable housing at the old middle school site during its meeting Tuesday night. The council approved construction of a road that would provide additional access to the conceptual development. The vote was 5-0 to extend Trip Street and its accompanying utility lines to State Avenue. But the council did not make a decision on the kind of housing it wants to see at the property at 321 State Avenue, single or multifamily homes for residents with low to moderate income. All this coming 2 weeks after the council declined to enter a development agreement with JCOR. City staff had proposed platting 5 lots in the northwest corner of the site to get them ready for construction. Councilmember Tim Garten discussed preparing 20 lots on the property and delaying the Trip Street extension. The council took no action on either proposal. To conform to the federal government's Neighborhood Revitalization Strategy Area guidelines, at least 51% of the housing must be affordable to households that earn low to moderate income. Some residents who live in the neighborhood around the old middle school appeared at Tuesday's meeting, urging the council to pursue a single-family home project like it had planned to do with JCOR. Council members said they understand and respect why the neighborhood wants to see single-family homes, but some were not ready to rule out the multifamily option just yet. Also in Wednesday's Tribune, the Story County Board of Supervisors approved a rezoning request for a third addition to the Cameron Estates housing development north of Ames during its Tuesday meeting. The supervisors unanimously approved the second reading of the rezoning ordinance and waived the third reading to give the request its final approval. The developer wants to divide 10 acres on the northeast corner of the development south of West 190th Street into 2 single-family residential lots and 3 outlots. The project is about a mile northwest of Ames. The board also signed off on a county man's request to divide his 35-acre piece of land into 2 lots so his brother can build a home on the property. That land is at the intersection of 560th Street and 140th Lane, south of Story City. Also Tuesday, the supervisors heard from the Director of Workforce Solutions for the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Brenda Dreyer told the board that Story County finished last year with the lowest unemployment rate in the state, 1.5% in December. There was more in Wednesday's Tribune. Representatives from the Iowa Department of Education stopped in Ames Tuesday night to deliver a presentation and answer questions about Iowa CORE, the state's academic standards that educators work with to help all students achieve. Iowa was the last state in the United States to establish a set of statewide educational standards in 2008. That's when Iowa lawmakers led the shift away from locally determined standards, which had caused inconsistent expectations around the state. Iowa CORE standards encompass what students should know and be able to do in math, science, English, language arts, and social studies, as well as 21st century skills in areas such as financial and technology literacy. Administrative consultant for standards and curriculum Rita Martin said that when it comes to English, language arts, and literacy, the focus is on having students read content-rich nonfiction to help them expand their own thinking, rather than predominantly having them write narratives and fictional stories. The goal is to build students' strength as readers. In math, the goal is to pursue conceptual understanding, not just knowing the solutions to math problems, but knowing which ones to pursue and why. Also Wednesday, word that the Ames man involved in a 2016 robbery and shooting in North Ames has been sentenced to more than 13 years in prison. 26-year-old Vigalis Shaw Jr. had pleaded guilty to conspiracy to distribute and possess marijuana after originally being charged with attempted murder and first-degree robbery. Also Wednesday, the Tribune reported that the Ames man accused of assaulting a police officer now faces new charges from his time in the Story County Jail. 25-year-old Michael Alexander Schenck had been arrested last week for allegedly stealing a truck from an Ames pest control company and breaking a police officer's wrist during the arrest. Then this past Monday, Schenck was charged with 2 counts of assault. Authorities said detention officers were escorting Schenck back to his cell from the showers when they told him to return the towel he had used. Schenck allegedly punched 2 officers in the head before they were able to subdue him. They suffered minor scrapes. Also on the crime beat, Wednesday's Trib had a story about the Ames teenager who allegedly stole a vehicle registered in Illinois, then presented false identification information to officers. The trial for 18-year-old Felicita Lynn Santana has now been set for March 20th. She pleaded not guilty on Tuesday. Police said they spotted a black 2008 Honda Civic leading Brookside Park at 1:30 a.m. earlier this month. When they stopped the car, Santana allegedly had the keys in her possession. The vehicle turned out to have been stolen. Court documents allege that Santana told police she had just returned from Illinois and handed officers an Illinois driver's license for a different person. One more note, Wednesday's Trib had a feature story about the 21 portraits that were lined up outside the entrance to the Ballard High School girls' basketball game on Tuesday night. Those portraits were of young children displaced by the ongoing conflict in Syria and who are living in a refugee camp. Ballard students are sending them to refugees thousands of miles away. In Thursday's Tribune, word that the Ames School Board outlined the parameters and search process surrounding the selection of the district's next superintendent during a work session on Wednesday. That process was set to begin yesterday, when the search firm Ray & Associates was to begin preparing information for the district's promotional flyer and online application form. Next month, the search firm will meet with teachers, students, parents, support staff, and others to determine community feelings regarding the next superintendent. An open community forum will also be held. March 25th has been set as the deadline for submitting applications. Top candidates are expected to be brought in for a first round of interviews in April. The board has agreed to setting the next superintendent's salary at around $200,000. Current superintendent Tim Taylor's base salary is $185,000, plus a cash benefit of $12,000 the district offers in lieu of paying for family insurance. Also in Thursday's Trib, the Gilbert School Board has voted to hold a $14 million bond election April 3rd. The money would go toward renovating all district schools and multiple athletic and fine art facilities. Also Thursday, the Trib reported that local watershed authorities think they are in good position to land new state funding for water quality projects, despite concerns that a bill passed by lawmakers Tuesday is not enough to clean the state's waterways. The Iowa House passed a Senate water quality bill Tuesday. It moves existing tax revenue from gambling proceeds and metered drinking water sales, estimated to be about $282 million over the next 12 years, out of the state's general fund and earmarks it for water quality projects. The bill was favored by large agricultural groups, but opposed by progressive environmental and agriculture groups. Also in Thursday's Tribune, word that two Iowa State professors have become the latest scientists to be dismissed from an Environmental Protection Agency committee, months after the federal agency announced new rules for those serving on its advisory panels. One of those dismissed is Catherine Kling, the Charles F. Curtis Distinguished Professor in Agriculture and Life Sciences at ISU. The other is Matthew Helmers, who holds the Dean's Professorship at ISU's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. The EPA issued new rules last October barring scientists who serve on the agency's advisory committees from receiving EPA grant money, a standard both Kling and Helmers fall under. Thursday's Tribune also reported that an Ames man and former North Polk High School teacher was sentenced to 6 years in prison Wednesday, nearly 4 months after a jury found him guilty of three counts of sexual exploitation. Court documents allege the victim was a teacher helper in 29-year-old Kevin Jacob Muhlenthaler's class. Also Thursday, word that the Huxley City Council voted to uphold its ban on pit bulls after an emotional meeting this week in which Mayor Craig Henry had to bang the gavel to restore order. In this week's Nevada Journal, retired Nevada School Superintendent Jim Walker has been hired as the new superintendent at Colo Nesco Schools. He will replace Steve Gray, who has been in a shared superintendency position between Nevada and Colo Nesco for the past couple of years. Walker said he will continue to serve on the city council, at least for now. The meeting times of the council and the Colo Nesco board do not conflict. Meanwhile, at this week's Nevada School Board meeting, the board heard that 16% of students at Nevada High are showing failing grades this semester compared to 24% last year. The total number of absences has declined, 144 so far this year, 258 last year. In addition, board members heard that groundbreaking for the new Billy Sunday baseball field is expected to take place this spring. At this week's Nevada City Council meeting, the council heard that Drain Tech, a plumbing business, has located a sewer line northwest of the Aquatic Center. The line is not deep enough to service the new rec center and baseball field, so the city must consider other options. In this week's Boone News Republican, details about the ongoing projects at Ledges State Park, about 4 miles south of Boone. The campground is being renovated, with some of the non-electric sites getting electrical facilities. A new road is being built in the campground, and Canyon Drive is being repaired. The campground is expected to reopen next year. Also in the News Republican, the Boone County Democratic Committee had a packed house on Monday when Iowa House candidate David Weaver and congressional candidate John Passion spoke about issues and their campaigns. Weaver is looking to unseat current Representative Chip Baltimore. Passion wants to unseat Iowa Congressman Steve King. Also in the News Republican, a feature story about Boone High School senior Jackson Smith, who is expanding his portfolio as an artist before he heads to college to study art. From garage doors to the studio walls of Local 5 in West Des Moines, Smith keeps himself busy. You can read all about him in the News Republican. In this week's Story City Herald, a long takeout on the $5.3 million bond issue that voters in the Roland Story School District will decide the fate of when they head to the polls February 6th. The bond would fund a new football and track complex and renovate the high school auditorium. If it's approved, the district also would allocate an additional $2.4 million from the physical plant and equipment levy and 1 cent sales tax, bringing the total project to nearly $8 million. The measure requires 60% voter approval to pass. Also in this week's Herald, a look at the Roland Story District's school mentoring program, which pairs adults with an elementary-age student. And that is your weekly summary of news from the pages of the Ames Tribune and other nearby newspapers. I'm Dennis Hart, wishing you a happy and safe weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for this past week's roundup of local news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. More news can be found at amestrib.com. And if you've just joined us, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. On January 31st, the day after the President's State of the Union address, many national grassroots environmental groups will be converging on Washington, D.C. for a nationally streamed event called Fossil Free Fast, the Climate Resistance. The event will be live-streamed from 7 to 9 in the evening on Wednesday in order to bring in people around the country. As part of this, a viewing party will be held here in Ames at the Unitarian Fellowship. Irv Claus has more information. Welcome to Local Talk, Irv. Tell us about this event.
Well, it's part of the national effort to get the word out about the current administration's abdication of responsibility for confronting climate change. We have to do this at the local level, it seems, in order to raise the political will of our politicians to do something about climate, because it's a very important and very immediate crisis. There will be a number of leaders at this event in Washington, D.C. that we will watch speak, including Bernie Sanders and Bill McKibben. Most everybody knows who Bernie Sanders is. Bill McKibben has been a very ardent leader of climate change issues since probably the 1990s. He has written several books. He actually founded an organization called 350.org. This is an organization that is trying to reduce our amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere from over 400 parts per million now to 350 parts per million. So this is what this is all about.
I see here there's somebody from the Puerto Rican Resilience Fund, NAACP, is a U.S. policy analyst. There's a whole range of people speaking that day.
Yes, and it's because there's lots of organizations that see this issue as a matter of social justice. And it is the poor people in the world that are being hurt the most. And we're seeing that already happening with low-lying coastal areas being flooded frequently, hurricanes that are more intense than they ever were, other kinds of major events, forest fires, for example, that are happening around the world. And it is the poor and the unsuspecting that are getting hurt.
And there's a wide variety of social justice organizations involved. I see there's at least 20 organizations that have come to sponsor this event, including the NAACP, the Indigenous Environment Network, Move On, even The Nation magazine is involved, and the Alliance for Climate Education. So it's a really wide group of national organizations. Now, there's also a local organization here connected to this. Tell us about that.
Right. In the Unitarian Fellowship, we have organized a group called the Climate Solutions Circle. This is a group of people who are gathering together once a month to talk about climate and what we can do about it on a local basis. And so far, we've delivered a sample resolution to the city council to address this issue. We have informed our own congregation of it. We are reaching out to other faith-based organizations in the city, as well as our national organization of the Unitarian Universalist Association. And we are trying to do what we can to make a dent in this problem. And it's a struggle because at the higher levels of government, they're opposing this.
Mm-hmm. So this event at the Unitarian Church is really open to anybody that's interested in finding out who your group is or what the issues are or just be getting involved, period.
Yes, it's open. And The national organization has actually put our location on their website so that people can register that are living in this area. All you have to do is to go to that site. And
what is the site?
Well, it's called Action Network is the name of it. It's one word, actionnetwork.org/event, and you should be able to get to it from there.
If you Google the name of the organization, I mean the name of the event, that'll probably come up
right
quickly. As I understand it, Action, I actually looked this up yesterday because I was curious about Action Network is an organization which essentially facilitates online organizing for events and activism. So the network is just serving as a place for people to register, right?
Right. That way give us a chance to see how many people in the area are interested, help us plan a little bit. But we're prepared to handle quite a few people. So all you got to do is walk in.
Presumably there's going to be a big screen and you'll be seeing.
We will have a large television screen with the computer capability of streaming the event.
You'll be streaming the event as it happens in Washington,
right,
D.C.
Right. Mm-hmm. It'll be a live stream. And then when it's finished, we hope to be able to have a discussion of what is happening locally and try to get some organization here in Ames and Story County and elsewhere to come together and start working towards this goal.
If you're concerned about environmental issues or social justice, this is a place to connect with other people.
Yes, I hope so. Global climate change, which I prefer to call global warming because that's what's happening, is referred to as a global carbon heating cycle that is causing environmental disasters around the world. And greenhouse gas emissions are increasing, not decelerating. The rise in ocean levels, the rate of rise in ocean levels is increasing. Glaciers are melting. Weather events are becoming more severe. And the science is very clear. Carbon dioxide is the primary culprit of all of this. And our actions today may hand young people a climate that is out of control. And James Hansen wrote in his book, and Storms of My Grandchildren, that he didn't want his grandchildren to grow up saying that his grandfather knew the problem but didn't do anything. And so it's up to us to make an effort to try to do something to reduce this crisis that we're facing. And it is a crisis. And if we've been talking about it now for almost 20 years, and we're very, very far behind in trying to get something done.
Okay, thank you. Again, the event is on Wednesday, the day after the State of the Union, from 7 to 9?
Right. Wednesday, January 31st, and it's from 7 to 9.
And the name of the event, if you want to look it up online, is Fossil Free Fast.
Fossil Free Fast, mm-hmm. Yes. Means that we have to quickly stop using fossil fuels.
Okay. Thank you so much, Irv. Thanks for coming by.
Okay. Thank you.
Montaña, viento, tráenos la claridad, viento, que viene de la montaña, viento, tráenos la claridad. Viento que viene del mar. alma viento, tráenos la libertad. Vuela, 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 vuela con nosotros. Vuela, 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 vuela con nosotros. Viento que viene del desierto, viento, traenos el silencio. Viento que viene del desierto, viento, traenos el silencio.
Cuatro Vientos by Danit. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Dwayne Reeves of Ames has been leading the committee charged by the school district with gauging community interest on which route to take with the upgrading of Ames High School. Carolyn Myers and Ann Kinzel of the Ames Progressive Alliance brought Mr. Reeves here to bring you up to speed on this.
I'm Carolyn Myers, and I'm here today with Dwayne Reeves and Ann Kinzel. Ann and I are both part of the Ames Progressive Alliance, and we're here to learn more from Dwayne about the recommendation for a new high school here in Ames. Dwayne was the leader for the Community Feedback Committee that recommended that we actually build a new high school for the community. And can you tell us more about how you came to lead that community feedback group regarding the high school and how many people were on the committee?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me in. Regarding the high school project, one of the things that this project did is it's the pinnacle of our school district. As you may remember, about 6 years ago, we did our elementary bond vote, and part of that vote was looking forward to the high school. I was the chairman of the community committee at that point, and I was asked by Dan Wooden to kind of look at what we have left, and that would have been the high school. The high school is pretty much piece and parts over 60 years. The community committee that came together this time was built together with PTO members, community members. We had about 20 people of different places throughout the community. We started work back this summer. We were doing the high school tours. And what we ended up doing is coming to a consensus of remodel versus rebuild. And so the rebuild was make a whole lot more sense. One of the concerns we had was, as anybody who would remodel anything, if you're going to spend $95 million on a remodel, you know that as soon as you open something up, there is a concern that are we going to spend another $20, $30, $40 million? In some cases of money we do not have. So this is a second committee that I had been asked to chair. It was kind of a personal thing for me because on the first committee, I was asked by Dan Wooden, a friend of mine at Iowa State University. And right before he passed, he kind of was going through a tough time with his cancer treatment. He asked me about the high school, and I said, well, let's get it going. And then he passed away, and I told him, you know, just before that, I go, well, we'll get a new high school, and we'll get it done. And it's time. The high school right now is in pretty rough shape. The do-nothing clause is not really a do-nothing. It's about a $30 to $40 million just to get it fixed. And at that point, what do you do with the kids? That's where we came today, and that's where we're at now with the petition drive that we're doing with the last couple weeks, which will culminate at the end of next week.
Ames Progressive Alliance is a lot about getting people involved in the community and how we seek feedback and how we learn things as a group. Can you tell me a little bit about how your committee or group functioned? How was input taken from the community? How is it shared with the school board?
It's kind of a two-phase thing. As I mentioned, this summer we did the Ames High School tours. They were open to the public. We came in. First of all, any of you all go on the tours?
No,
actually, I didn't even know they were happening.
Throughout the summer, we did a couple smaller ones, and then we had a very large one right towards the end of the summer. It was kind of tough because people in Ames tend to scatter during the summertime. But what we did, we started out with the school board asking us to look at a remodel versus a rebuild aspect. So we used the high school tours and talking to the public at that point in those open forums to allow for them to come in and see the high school, walk through the high school, feel it as if they were a student, and then come back into a group at the end and talk about it. So at that point, we had 300-400 folks that came through the high school. They came back in and they gave us feedback as to what they thought. They talked a little bit about the difficulties for the disabled. They talked about the difficulties for security. The 11 elevation changes within the school made it tough to get through as an older adult. We had some folks that would come through that it was tough for them to navigate that school. And remember, this is a public building as well. So there's public events. The auditorium was hard to get in and get out of. Grandparents like coming into those and watching their grandkids. Parents, tough for a lot of folks to get in and out of there. From that, we moved into the phase where the school board then said, okay, we think the remodel is not an option. We are going to go forward with the building of a new school. And so now the second phase is coming in and saying, what do we really think the price would be? What would the public think the price would be? So from our committee and our PTOs, we've hit through social media, through the discussions on the radio. We've had Channel 13 come out and talk to us a little bit to try to get people to say, here, weigh in. At the tours, we provided an email address, that ahsfuture@gmail.com, to come out and say, send me your feedback. And I got some discussion from some of the community members that said it's time. This school has been needed to be rebuilt many years ago. It's not functional for today's academics. One of the concerns was that kids don't learn the way that we learned back in the 70s and 80s. They learn very differently. And teachers teach very differently than what they do back then. So we took our committee, we used social media, we used TV, we used radio. The newspaper wrote many articles about what we were doing and how we were doing it to get out into the community and solicit feedback. We got some pretty good feedback at the school board, talked through this a little bit on two or three different occasions. They just wanted to know where the community was. And we used a couple Facebook groups to solicit feedback, got some good feedback out of that, positive information about getting this high school built. And that's where we've gone from there.
So you're satisfied with the results that you got?
I don't know that I'm satisfied. I know that the community is ready for a new high school. I think that it has been ready for a while. I would have liked to have had more of a process that we could have gotten a bigger, broader scope of Ames folks. You know, I mean, we're pretty limited in that we don't have the luck of Des Moines where you have multiple radio stations, multiple TV stations that come and sit on your doorstep mm-hmm. and ask you questions. We are very happy that we had Channel 8 and Channel 13 talking about it. You know, we have Mel in the Morning and Trent Rice here. We have a few Facebook groups that we can go out through, and they've been sharing our information.
We have KHOI.
And you have KHOI, yes. And I'm glad to be here. So, you know, we had kind of a list of people that we wanted to talk to, and the Ames Progressive Alliance was one of the groups. We wanted to get through the petition drive and then start looking at folks that say, you know, what do you want now? Do you want to vote yes? Do you want to vote no? What are your concerns with a yes vote? We mentioned a little bit about LEED buildings. Mm-hmm. You know, how are you going to take care of a LEED building into the future? And that's the next step. I mean, it just doesn't end because we get the petitions and we vote. Mm-hmm. We go forward from there.
So can you tell me more about any of the other options that were discussed besides building the new high school? Were any other ideas brought to the table?
Really, we're kind of land poor with the placement of a high school. Mm-hmm. In order to build a new high school, you need about 60 to 70 acres. And we really don't have that in Ames. And mm-hmm. quite frankly, we don't have the money to buy that where it is available. About the only place that has 60 to 70 acres to buy doesn't really sit in the Ames School District. So we'd be building outside of our school district. The other options were to renovate the building. A lot of challenges. In an elementary school, you can pick them all up and move them like what we did with Camp Sawyer at the old Edwards building. But at a high school, in one wing alone, you're going to have freshmen to seniors. So you're going to have this mixture of students. And how do you take a wing down, not putting up, you know, 15 or 20 portable buildings outside, mm-hmm. which has its own considerations.
Yeah, I grew up in California. I thought those portables were permanent.
I did too. I was in Colorado and I always thought, you know, this is kind of interesting that the school has other schools. But the renovated aspect of it was the concern was the logistics of the kids. Right now, I have a daughter that's a ninth grader. She will never enjoy the brand new high school. It'll be done, you know, if the vote goes through after she graduates. But you're going to have kids that are going to be disrupted for the 4 full years if they tried to renovate that. Rather than being kind of like what we did with Fellows and Meeker, where we put a big fence in, the kids went to school in their old building. When their new building was open, they knocked the old building down, and it was a clean transition for the most part. That was about the only other option that we had. We don't have the property to do the other things.
One of the things that I've heard you say several times, and perhaps I haven't been reading my newspaper well enough, but tell me about the petition. What's that about?
The petition is kind of a unique idea that the Iowa State Legislature has. School districts just can't say, we want a bond for $110 million and put it to a vote. Some statutory limit of time where the people can get gain information, things of that effect. What the state legislature does is it says, okay, school districts, you can bring up the subject, but then you have to have a community committee that comes out and says, we're going to go get the signatures required, and it's 25% of what was at the last school election. So we need about 935 signatures. We're shooting for 1,200 as a target to have some comfort zone there. But the state legislature kind of puts it back on the community to say, here, we want this, and hand it back to the school board who asked for it to start off. So it's a strange dynamic rather than allowing school districts to just say, we need this, public. Here's your 90 days to vet the process. And then you're going to go vote and you're going to tell us yes or no. They kind of put it back on the public to say, we want it. But the public can't just go, hey, we're going to get a petition of 1,200 signatures and say, eh, we want a school out, you know, down by the airport.
Well, lots of people think that the legislature is kind of a strange dynamic, but this is a new twist on that.
That's a whole nother show.
So how do you – what's the plan to get these signatures? How does this happen?
Well, we've already started. We got the approval from the school board on the bond language, which is the other strange part of this, is the school board has to actually create the bond language. So once they create the bond language, they can then – provide that in a petition. What we did with this vote is very different than most of your candidate votes. Typically, the candidate gets the petition, they walk their community, they walk their ward, whatever it may end up being, depending on what they're running for, they get people signing it. What we did with this one was, is we kind of asked our PTOs to be part of this. It's going to be their children that are down in those schools from seventh grade down that are going to be enjoying the new high school. So we asked the PTOs to partner with this. The PTOs came out and we said, hey, we need 935 signatures. We want 1,200. If each one of the PTOs got 150 to 180 signatures, we will have our statutory need. So the PTOs have taken the petitions. They've hit the walk-up and drive-up traffic and had those signatures. They've did it at their events at their schools. I've spent a lot of time at the high school asking people, are you from Ames? Would you like to sign a petition? And the petition drive is not finished. The weather kind of hit us on the chin a little bit, and it has pushed us into this coming week. We'll be done by the end of the week, and we should have that number of signatures. So if any of you here have not signed the petition, I have one outside with me.
You know, when you don't have kids in school anymore, the connection is a little more tenuous, mm-hmm. or if you don't have kids in school. So I didn't even know that we had a petition drive. And I think one of the things that's difficult for all of us is the ability of local newspapers to be engaged in the community every day goes down through no fault of their own. This ability to share information sort of across a neutral level gets really hard. So for people like me whose kids are no longer in school in Ames, I'm pretty much left out in the cold on that kind of thing.
One of the neat things about putting a new building up is that one of the design partners that came in early was Halic Architecture, and they did the phase one architecture. And they talked a lot about having a school that the community could be proud of, having a school that the community can use. So the current elementary schools, the what we are going to call the community portions of it, the gymnasiums, those kind of things, you can lock down the school and still get into those aspects. So one of the designs of most new high schools is, and if you've been to the Waukees and Valleys and a few others of the world, they lock down the academic side of the house. So they open up the community side. So what you need to do is go listen to one of our beautiful bands that plays as a community member. Mm-hmm. You know, those are the kind of things that we want the community to come in. One of the things that we also have is an auditorium currently at City Hall that really isn't conducive to a larger audience. One of the things they want to do at the high school is build a larger auditorium so we can have those dance recitals. We can have those fifth grade bands. We can have some of the things that Ames does, because remember, this is our building. We're buying mm-hmm. it. We're pushing for it. Whether our kids are going to be there or not, it's our building. And the school district understands that. So they want to have that side of that building so that we all can use it and we all can benefit from it.
I'm going to say that, full disclosure, I went to a high school in eastern Iowa from Clinton, Iowa. In the 70s, there was a huge fire that almost destroyed the high school. And they actually rebuilt most of it in the same property and then renovated the rest that was still salvageable. And in the last 5 years, they've actually added on to the high school and they haven't moved it. So admittedly, when I first heard that we were going to be building a new high school, my thought was, why are they not renovating? Why are they not adding on? Because that's what happened with my high school. So I'd like to hear more about what some of the thought process was with discussions that were about that, because I'm not hearing a lot about those discussions. I'm hearing more about, well, only the new building was considered.
Actually, the renovation was considered quite often. Currently, right now, we have a high school that has been renovated 13 times. It has 11 different elevations, It has a roof level, so you can think of with renovations that the roofs are all at different levels.
Sure. And what do you mean by elevations when you say 11 different elevations? I think not all of our listeners will understand what that means.
Elevations means when you walk into the building, you're on one elevation.
Mm-hmm.
You then must either walk up a step, walk down a step. If you've ever been near the art building and art wing in our current high school, they have a ramp that is so long, it's the kids, I think, would love to skateboard down it. So the high school kind of sits on different hills and different elevations. And to get to those, you either have to have steps, you have to have ramps, you have to also either have an incline to get through them.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk kind of like over where the gym is versus where the main office is. You have to kind of walk up a hill. And when we get back to that community aspect, and some of our young kids who are physically challenged, it's not easy for them to get around and through there. When you've renovated 13 times, I think the school district looked and said, can we renovate? Can we displace 1,400 children in a way that their academics don't go down? So remember, you know, this has just been voted the number one school in the state.
Mm-hmm.
A school that the academics are very, very challenging. And this is something that there's already challenges in the school. So do we make it more difficult for the kids who are having a tough time by moving them all over the place, having construction all over the place? When they renovated Sawyer, it was going to be something that they were thinking they were going to be done fairly quickly. They opened up some walls and went, wow, we need to fix this. Oh, we need to make this more sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
To do that to a high school where you have 12 to 1,300 children already, and the way that this high school is configured, they were going to end up knocking down entire places, in some cases because of the ADA requirements.
Sure.
So if you look at the auditorium alone, our auditorium is almost unusable. And as soon as you open it up, you need to redo it. So what you're going to do with the auditorium and the gym is knock it down. That's renovating those aspects of the school. So that was looked at, and that was something we vetted with the public.
Mm-hmm.
We asked on the tours, we asked people, what do you think? Do you think we can take these elevations and make them usable for people that are challenged? Can we make it a community aspect? One lady that came through, she had gone to school there in the, I think she said the late 60s. She says it doesn't change much, which it really hadn't. And she said that she couldn't imagine coming through this school today and having any kind of physical challenge and getting through all the different modes of and the elevations of that
mm-hmm.
school. So the actual renovation was talked and vetted quite often this summer.
Was the cost broken down of how much it would cost to renovate versus how much it would cost to build an actual new school?
Yes. Actually, HALA did the phase one architecture, and what they did is they brought up the different costs,
mm-hmm.
and the cost to renovate was about $95 million, mainly because you're taking a building down and you're redoing all the heating, all the cooling, all the internal wiring, because now, you know, we don't just run phone cables. We got to have all this high broadband to push the internet. You're going to have to bring your elevations down so you have one stable thing.
Mm-hmm.
The ADA requirements were going to be just unbelievable to try to flatten that building a little bit. And you still would have to knock buildings down to reconfigure to bring that all into things. So the renovation cost was $95 million. To build a new school, they ran anywhere from $96 to $97 million to $112 million. So when you look at, for instance, down at Valley High School in Des Moines, their original thought was to renovate much of their building, which they started. They are now 7 years overdue, $40 million in the hole, and there's people that say the Valley still isn't done. We were concerned with a 1960 building, a 1970 building. I mean, the newest addition onto the high school is 12 years old. We asked the public, well, what do you think? Do you think this could even be done? Plus, that doesn't take into consideration the logistics of the kids.
So this is a fascinating discussion because it brings in so many issues in the community. Unfortunately, our time is a little bit limited. But I have two questions I want to ask you in closing. The first would be Ames skews old in terms of a voting public. And more than half of our population is ISU students who historically do not vote in local elections. So my question to you is, what's the plan to get support from the community in a community that has a rather interesting voting public?
One of the things that we've done already to garner some of the support is going through the elementary schools, as we mentioned, and the middle school. One of the things, the people that are going to use this facility are going to be the parents and the grandparents of those kids. Those are the ones that are going to benefit from this new school. Pretty much if your child is an eighth grade or higher, they're going to be graduated before this school is done. But what we're looking at is we're using the elementary schools, their social media sides of it. We have a couple Facebook groups that we're going through. And we were going to come to you guys before you got an email to me. I was really excited to say, hey, look, this is a community building as well. Mm-hmm. These are things that we want to do, and we're looking for support for that as well. You're right. Just because you don't have kids in the community doesn't mean you can't enjoy the facility. Currently, if you kind of want to walk the elevations and sit in tiny seats in the auditorium, some of the plays, some of the band concerts are just unbelievable. These kids do wonderful things. Mm-hmm. And the community really should enjoy in that. And we do see quite a few parents and or grandparents, their kids are long gone from Ames. They're coming back because they enjoy the quality of what they're seeing in there. So that is one of the things we're pushing is, first and foremost, we're getting it to the people that can benefit from it, but then also looking in the community and the greater good of saying, hey, look, this is something that we all can, you know, a nice auditorium that we can go watch a play at in Ames. Hey, I don't have to drive to Des Moines. You know, when actors isn't having their things going on, the high school usually is. So, and those kids are awesome.
Thank you. My second question is, can you give us a short version of the timeline that you see for the next several months in getting this rolling?
The timeline has started rolling. As I mentioned last week when the bond information was created, we now have a very short timeline to get the petitions in. So we have to actually let the school board know by the end of next week that we have enough petition signatures to get a meeting with the school board, because remember, school boards have to issue their agendas ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So by the 30th, we have to tell the school board, we have enough. So at the school board meeting on February 5th, they will then accept the petitions or not accept the petitions and say, we're going forward. That then locks them into presenting them to the county auditor. The county auditor then has to certify them by somewhere in the middle of February, which then starts the clock. Bond vote is April 3rd. We have a thing called spring break in the middle of there. So we're going to lose some time there. But we're going to have about 4 to 5 weeks where we're going to go back out through everybody, through the same community groups, add in some of the community groups, talking to the civic groups. We've talked to many of them all along. I did talk to the Golden Kiwanis, and we had a blast. They made me sing. I'm not a good singer, but I sang anyway.
What, the Ames fight song?
No, and I'm not an Ames guy. I didn't go to the high school here, so I wouldn't have even known that. I could hum it, I think, maybe. But I did meet with them, and so we're going to go back out through the civic groups. We're going to hit some of the groups like yourself that have some concerns about some of the achievement gaps that we have. And remember, a new high school with new learning actually should help that. There's some studies out there that we've heard from some of the professors at Iowa State that says, you know, learning environments have a lot to do with those achievement gaps. Teachers can't teach to it if they don't have it. So we're going to have February 5th, about February 15th, the bonds become real. We're going to have probably about a 3-4 week push. April 3rd is our vote.
Wow, that's an impressive timeline.
Yes, definitely.
It's very quick.
Yes, that's a lot of hard work, and we really appreciate you putting all that hard work in and leading this group, because we know that's quite the labor of love, so thank you.
It is. It's kind of interesting, because I worked on the elementary vote, and my kids were in elementary school by the time it was done. You have a daughter that's out of high school already. I have another daughter that's a freshman, and she'll be out of high school before this one's done.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a community thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good for our community. It makes our community better. It brings those families in, and it's kind of been neat to see the folks moving into the Meeker neighborhood and listening to them.
Well, I think it's a strong message that have an investment in their school, if they have children there or not.
Yes,
as you
ma'am.
Say, it's mm-hmm. a community asset.
Definitely.
So thank you, Dwayne Reeves, for your leadership, your time working on Ames High School and Ames Elementary Schools. Everyone in the community benefits from your volunteer work.
We hope. Thank you very much. And thank you again for having me.
Of course. And we'd also like to thank our host, KHOI Community Radio. They've been great in letting us come on to their local talk radio show with the Ames Progressive Alliance. Please be sure to keep up with any APA activities on the Ames Progressive Alliance Facebook page, our Twitter, and our website at amesprogressivealliance.org. You can also reach us at amesprogressivealliance@gmail.com. There'll be more information coming up soon about the solar initiative.
It's been great fun this morning, and thank you again, Dwayne Reeves.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, KHOI.
And that was Carolyn Myers and Ann Kinsel of the Ames Progressive Alliance speaking with Dwayne Reeves. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. Earlier in the show, we also heard from Irv Kloss, Patch Larbaum, and Dennis Hart. Giving a roundup of the past week's local news from the Ames Tribune, amestrib.com. Local Talk was engineered today by Jackie Norman. Thank you, Jackie. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Shelley. We also heard Cuatro's Vientos by Danit. Local Talk airs 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here at 89.1 FM. Also remember, you can hear KHOI streaming live at khoifm.org and hear past shows as well, archived on the website. Remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting the Estonian National Symphony Orchestra on Thursday, February 1st at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.